Over the last 75 years, over 10,000 chemicals have been introduced to our food supply. Yet the EU only allows 300 food additives. But at Thrive Market, we bring our members the highest quality brands and restrict more than 1,000 ingredients found at conventional grocery stores. Making the switch is easy with our Healthy Swaps scanner, which finds better versions of all your favorite pantry, snacking, and home essentials without the added junk, dyes, and fillers. Plus, it's all delivered straight to your door. So if you're looking to shop at a grocery store that actually cares about your health, go to thrivemarket.com/podcast and you'll get 30% off your first order and a free gift.
Hey there, this is Tom from the future. I'm whispering because time travel requires whispering. I don't know if you've listened to the newest episodes in order to find this out, but with the holidays here, there is a brand new thing that Patreon is doing where you can gift subs, which is really cool because that means a few different things. First of all, if you know somebody else who enjoys this show, you can get them a sub to whatever tier you want for whatever amount of time. So if you look at certain rewards and you think it would be really cool to get them those rewards, or just being part of the community, or even just getting ad-free episodes, that's something you can give this holiday season. Also, it means that if you've been wanting to sign up for the Patreon and you haven't been able to, and you want to ask for it as a gift from somebody else, then that can work as well. So, both of those things are options. All that you have to do is go to Patreon, log in, or create an account. You can just create a free account. You don't have to sign up with anybody, anyone's Patreon. And then you go to the Patreon page for this show, and you choose to gift a thing. You go through all the little options, and you send them a gift. It's really simple. It would be super helpful to us, and it's a fun thing to give. So hope you consider that, and I hope you have a wonderful holiday. All right, let's get back to the show.
Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play.
Welcome to the Fallout Lorecast, the podcast that explores the boundaries of our knowledge about the world of Fallout.
So this is it. We're wrapping up another year. 2024 is in the books. We've been doing this podcast since about this time, right at the end of 2019. So 5 full years. We're going into the 6th year. 6 years. We're entering 6 years of the Fallout Lorecast. That is amazing. I had no idea that this could actually last this long or be this popular, and I have all of you to thank for that. So I thought it would be fun to wrap up the year with a kind of a different episode. I don't do these sort of Q&A episodes. I know some shows will do things like this as little bonuses and things like that, but I figured, you know what, let's put it on the main feed. Let's do a Q&A. I'm going to post about this on the Discord, which I did, and on social media and on the Patreon, and get a bunch of questions from all of you. And I can't guarantee I'll hit all of them, but I will hit the best ones and the highlights. And we're just going to take this episode one little question at a time, and we'll just see where it goes. So hang on tight. Let's see what happens. Here we go. All right, so first question. Chaz Waza was the first person to respond on the Discord when I posted the question and says, which Fallout vault do you think you'd best be suited, and which one do you think you'd survive in? That is a tough question. Okay, so I don't have just kind of a whole complete running list of every single vault in my head, but I think just off the bat, right from the beginning, probably none of the ones where terrible stuff was happening. None of the ones where there were like different conflicts for power or people were being driven insane by things. I think I probably, even just statistically, did I say just statistically, I would be on the worse side of that. I would not be on the better side of most of those situations. I'm gonna just have to pick something as simple as Vault 76, because most of those people survived, because statistically speaking, that's how that would work.
So that's the most likely version. You know, you pick a control vault or a vault that, you know, like 101 where it's not that severe, or, you know, 13 with, you know, the water chip, or any of those feel like I'm going to survive. But I think the funny answer is probably something like the Gary vault, because I would just be a Gary and all the Garys just all were in there. So maybe I would just be Gary. Thanks for the question, Chaz. All right, Be Free writes, where do you want most to see a new Fallout game take place? This comes up a lot. We've discussed this a lot over the years about different potential locations for a Fallout game. And I think there are some that really stand out. I think that the best location is going to be something that truly resonates and truly has some historical quality to it. Something that, especially if it's placed in the United States, has something to do with the history of the country and the importance of early American life kind of being blended into what else is going on in the world. I think those settings are the most interesting. And I think most of the Fallout games have hit those kinds of locations pretty well. I know this was one of the potential locations, I think, for Fallout 4 was New York City. I think seeing a bombed out Manhattan on an island with the remnants of some of the buildings that are still there, but even more interestingly, the underground. There are so many levels and layers of things under the city, and I think so much of the population would have gone underground. And then on top of that, just the idea of, like, I don't know, mutant crocodiles in the sewers and a subway system that people are living in, kind of like in Fallout 3, where you have some of those kinds of locations. I think that also mixed with, you know, the Americana of, you know, America's greatest city, New York City, that kind of thing. But then you could also work in some of the boroughs and, heck, even parts of New Jersey. Like, you could expand that out beyond just the island of Manhattan and show that things would have played out differently in different locations. That would be very cool. I think that would be very cool. And I've been to New York City before, and it would also be really cool to see some of the places that I've actually personally been to and see those kind of changed. And that's always fun as well. So I think that's what I would go with. Thanks, Be Free. All right, let's pull one from the Patreon. Let's see. Serenity Ann says, where do you think Fallout 5 will be set? Okay, so this is a different question. Be Free was asking, where do I want a new Fallout game to take place. Serenity is asking, where do I think Fallout 5 will actually be located? And that's a very different type of question. I think it's still going to be somewhere in the US. I don't think we're going to get somewhere international. I used to think that was impossible, and I've talked about this before. But Tim Kaine had talked on his YouTube channel about how that was something that he had considered early on in the developments of, like, Fallout 1 and Fallout 2. So I don't know that it's impossible that it'll go international. I just think it's unlikely. Let's see. Where do I think it'll be? I think if maybe this doesn't answer exactly for Fallout 5, but let me just say the next Fallout game, whether that's Fallout 5 or it's some sort of spinoff, I think we're going to head back to the West. I think we're going to go back to some location over there. I think we're going to pull in some of the settings and things that are happening, well, happened in New Vegas, but also are happening in the TV show, into a video game that is set, if not in California, maybe in a place like Seattle or somewhere in Texas. I think, and Texas isn't really fully west, but you get the idea. Not the East Coast is kind of the idea. So I think we'll probably see something like that. That would be my guess. So thanks, Serenity. All right, next up, we've got Emily M on the Patreon, who asks, this is going to be a heated question. This is going to be debated. Which is the best Fallout New Vegas DLC? I talked about a bunch of the Fallout New Vegas DLCs on the rankings episode, where you all ranked the different games and the DLCs and things like that. And this is tough because some of those DLCs are a little bit more debated than others in the community, but overall they all appear to be loved. So if I were to pick one over the others, it's going to upset the majority of everyone else who likes the other ones, because there's just a lot of them. Also, I'm not very good at picking favorites. I have a really difficult time parsing that. I
I'm much better at saying, I like this for these reasons, and I like this other thing for these other reasons. But if I had to pick a favorite, I'm not going to go with, I know these are all very character driven, and that's usually the reason why you would pick one over than the others, or maybe just the way certain things play out. But there's something about Dr. Klein in Old World Blues. If you go back to Big MT and those old doctors, and heck, even the way that the robots look with the multiple old CRT screens and the blue lighting, as opposed to like the green or the yellowish kind of coloring for the stuff going on in the game. Something about that aesthetic always sticks with me, like over the years. And we have to go back now. I mean, think about it. We're going into 2025. Fallout New Vegas came out in 2008. That was 16 years ago, right? Like, and yeah, it's fun to go back and play these things over again, but there's something about the first time you experiencing things. And I talk about this pretty often on the show as well. That first playthrough, the way things hit you the first time, and seeing the Big MT, and specifically these weird looking like monitors and screens and robots and stuff like that. Something about that felt so uniquely different from what we had seen in Fallout 3 and the rest of New Vegas at that point, to me. And so that's what I'm going to go with, Old World Blues. But let me know your thoughts. Which ones are your favorites? All right, let's move on. Let's go back to the Discord. We've got Daydreamer Nick, who writes, do you think we'll ever get a retelling or remaster of the first two games? So Todd Howard has spoken directly about this and said that that's not going to happen, that those two games are set in stone. They are what they are. They're classics for a reason. And Bethesda will not be revising those new games and bringing them up to speed with like current graphics and those kinds of things, which part of me is like, okay, that's kind of a bummer. It would be cool to see those. But there's another part of me that understands from the developer side how difficult that would be and how judged they would be on every little decision they make. And it would be very, very difficult to make people happy about that. And if they get any little bit wrong, they will stoke the ire of the anti-Bethesda side of the Fallout fan base. So it's a very dangerous proposition. And then they would be accused of just money grabbing and all of that. So I can totally see the hesitance to do that from their side of it. I think there is hope, though, from the modding community. I know people have been modding Fallout 1 and Fallout 2 into things like Fallout 4. And I think that will continue to happen. I haven't tried any of those specifically. I'm not completely up to date with those and how complete they are. But I think that there is some hope there from that side of the community that that could actually work. So I think that's where it's at. And when it comes to when somebody like Todd actually says, and in general, I know a lot of people are not trustworthy of developers because they're like, oh, well, they're lying through their teeth. No, I don't think that that's particularly accurate. They are often being careful with their words because they understand how people will react to the things that they say. And sometimes they are not saying certain things. But when it comes to things like this, and Todd just flat out says, yeah, we're not going to do that, I'm pretty sure that's just the way it's going to be. And that doesn't mean that somebody can't change their mind in the future or somebody else ends up in charge and makes a different decision. But in those kinds of things, I kind of take him at his word. I'm like, okay, there's a reason why he's just saying, hey, we're not going to do that. And it's not because he's expecting to change his mind or he's going to pull a, oh, surprise, we told you we're not going to do it, but here it is. That's probably not going to happen. So that's my sense of it. So thanks for the question, Daydream. All right. K_P writes, if you were transported to any Fallout game, which one would you want to be sent to and why? Which one would you least want to be sent to and why? Thank you. Ooh, that's an interesting question. All of them. Going back to the question about the vaults, all of them are extremely dangerous. Statistically speaking, I would not survive in any of them. I am not trained at surviving in the wilderness or being able to, you know, take care of finding food and shelter and those kinds of things. One of my best friends from college is the kind of guy who, get this, I mean, he grew up in the Boy Scouts. He enjoys being outdoors. He takes his family camping. But in college, right after college, the first thing he did was he went out to, I think it was Arizona, to a Boy Scout camp and worked for probably at least the summer. I think it was a little bit longer than like the summer season, and took high school kids out on like two week long treks across the wilderness, where he taught them how to survive in the wild. And he loved it. He would go 2 weeks without a shower and, just had to find his own food and water and, you know, shelter when it was raining and all of these kinds of things out in the wilderness of like Arizona. And that was like heaven. He loved it. I am the complete opposite of that. And so much of being in one of the Fallout games has to do with just figuring out how you're going to survive day to day, where your food's going to come from, all of those kinds of things. So when you look at those logistics, I would be terrible. I would wither up and die within a few months. I would not survive it. I'm an air conditioner indoors kind of person. And I live in Florida, and so the heat is very hot. The humidity is out there, and I try not to be outdoors as much as possible unless it's actually nice out. But I think the question is probably leading more towards like which of the games and the things going on in the games would you want to be in? That's a tricky question, too. And which wouldn't you want to be in? I don't think I would pick. I think I would pick. They're all in. This, okay, the environments of each of them are kind of dangerous and unpredictable, and also either cold or hot. You've got the deserts in New Vegas and in Fallout 1 and Fallout 2, and you know, the western landscape. You've got kind of the northeast in Fallout 3 and Fallout 4. Every one of them is dangerous. Every one of them is different. Okay, so I think I would go with Fallout 4, and specifically the Nuka-Cola expansion and all the different weird robots, because cool robots, and at least I'd get to go to like Nuka-Cola world and see something that's kind of fun. I think I'd have to go with that, but otherwise, nope, no good. I'm not going to survive any of those. So thanks for the question, underscore. All right, let's go back to the Patreon. Giles writes, how has the inclusion of the supernatural otherworldly, so Zaytans, cryptids, Dunwich Horror, etc., to the Fallout universe enriched your playing experience? What place does this element have in a nuclear post-apocalyptic game? That's a very interesting question. Your second sentence there about what place does this have, do those things have in a nuclear post-apocalyptic game, is I'm implying some intent in that question, and I could be wrong about my interpretation here. So feel free to let me know if I respond incorrectly to this, but I think what you're implying is that those things feel like they come in stark contrast to the other things that are happening. My sense of why that is because so much of the original Fallout games were this collection of ideas that came from literature and from movies before the, 1997 or whatever the exact year was they started working on it. And so they were pulling these, sci-fi and horror influences from a wide variety of things and putting them all in the same setting. So when you look at it from the settings perspective, it doesn't immediately tell you like, oh, well, you would expect to run into, aliens here or, horrors, like these dark ancient god types of things. But when you look at it from the perspective of, oh, they're pulling influences from lots of places and they're allowing the developers to insert their own fun things that they would want all in a setting, then it makes sense. And to your question about how has the inclusion of these things enriched my playing experience, from my perspective, I love when I can't predict what is going to happen. To me, that is one of the best things you can do in a story or in a video game or in a movie. When something feels rote and predictable, I'm kind of out right away. This is similar to in Elder Scrolls. When I first started playing Elder Scrolls, I didn't realize in Oblivion that you could become a vampire. I didn't even realize vampires were a thing. In my mind, this was a high fantasy world. That's what Elder Scrolls Oblivion looked like. It looked like their take on the Lord of the Rings or something like that. And you've got these elves and men. You've got all these different races. You've got this history of this world that goes way, way back. You've got like, oh, maybe there were dragons in the past and all of these things. And right off the bat, it was saying, oh, this is high fantasy. When you get into the details, similar to J.R.R. Tolkien's stuff, vampires and werewolves exist. And they do. They just don't show up in The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings. They're part of the longer, deeper legendarium of the Silmarillion and the other books that he was working on. And that plays out the same way in Oblivion, where like, oh, that's a thing. I didn't expect it. It doesn't immediately resonate as like, oh, this is something that is going to be here. And in Fallout, that's where the aliens and the ancient gods and those kinds of things kind of fill out the world in a much more cryptids. Yeah, those two. They fill out the world in a much more interesting sort of way because they're tangentially sci-fi and horror related to post-apocalyptic stuff. But when you cram them all together, it's like, oh yeah, I added those extra toppings on the pizza. It turns out it's really good. So that's my perspective on that. That is a great question. And I'm glad that they've expanded out or even expanded out initially into some of those ideas and have continued to just kind of keep them in the background. They're not really foreground stuff, but they do keep showing up. And they're these extra little spices that keep things going and kind of unpredictable. So I do love that. So thanks for that question, Giles. All right, we're going to keep rolling with it. I'm not going to do a mid-break on this episode. I'm going to just put that stuff at the end in order to just keep going, answering questions. You all know about the Patreon. You know how all that stuff works. And gifting is a thing, but I'm not going to go into it. But here, let's move on. We have the Dash Dragon. This is on Discord, who writes, what weapon and gear would you use in the wasteland, not limiting to things in the games? Example, using a sock with marbles is valid. That sounds awesome. Now I want a sock with marbles in like Fallout 76 and all the different skins and all the different kind of socks you could put it in or bags or whatever. That would be really cool. I love that idea. All right. So what would I use? What weapons and gear would I use? So when it comes to equipment, armor, I would use whatever is most effective and I'm able to get my hands on. In real life, yes, give me power armor. If I'm marching into an area where it's infested by ghouls or something like that, yes, give me power armor every day of the week. Absolutely. When it comes to weapons, so my sense of it is, okay, so this is another thing that Tim Kaine talked about on his YouTube channel, which if you're not watching, absolutely go check it out. It is wonderful. He gives tons of insights and took notes from back in the day and fills in all sorts of details. But one of the things that he talks about is how early on they debated how common would ammo be? Would ammo still survive in the world, you know, 80 years later, 100 years later, 200 years later? How would that work? And they came to the conclusion that they had a lot of different sources back in the late 90s. And some of them were saying, well, the gunpowder would get wet. It wouldn't last very long. The casings would eventually fail, any of those kinds of things. And so really, you've got a few decades, but eventually the ammo would just go bad. Some of them said it would last longer, but the conclusion that they came to was even if the original ammo went bad, there would be people out in the world who were recasing ammo, who were making and rebuilding ammo, but even then it would still be relatively rare. So if that's the case, and power would be rare too, you know, like the kinds of power cells that would power your laser rifles and any of that kind of stuff. Also, it would be a lot harder to come across the laser rifle. Also, if you have a laser rifle, you are now more of a target for just other people who are surviving or raiders who want your gear because your gear is really nice. So, and I guess that you could say the same thing about power armor, but we'll go with weapons here for a minute. But I think I would probably carry something that was easy to hold onto, like a pistol that had ammo, but I would be very careful about using that ammo, and something that was, you know, easy to stow away, easy to keep with me, easy to keep in a pocket, easy to, you know, keep track of, but not super big, like a rifle of any sort. I think I would also have a collection of melee weapons because they don't require ammo. And when, you know, or fuel, I mean, I guess you could have a chainsaw or something, but I think when you're working on your farm and a bunch of ghouls come by, yeah, you're going to want to shoot at them, but they move fast and it's hard to hit them and you're wasting ammo and you might need that ammo for something else. So having a really, you know, effective sword or a hammer or something that you can smack them in the head, kind of like in a zombie movie, might actually be more effective in those situations, or at least more reliable. So I think I'd have a combination of those kinds of things, especially because you could find parts for both and both would be repairable, whereas more complicated gear, like you could be like, oh, well, I'd have a Fat Man, but keeping a bunch of mini nukes on you would be very difficult. It would be very hard to find new ones, and you could also blow yourself up. So maybe not so much. So I think that's what I would go with. That's a good question. All right, let's move on. Let's see. Number, well, there are no, I don't even remember the numbers anymore, but Wasteland Ronin writes, do you think Fallout will advance its storyline further into the future? What would you like? What would that look like? I'm sorry. Yes, I think that is continually been the pattern. The only thing that has really gone backwards in order is Fallout 76, because they wanted to do a sort of prequel thing. But even the TV shows are the most latest dated things in the Fallout universe. Every mainline Fallout game has moved the timeline forward. I think that will continue. And I think that we're going to see so let's look at the pattern that has occurred in the games. In Fallout 1 and Fallout 2, you have the survival of the people on the West Coast, and enough time has gone by that they've built these organizations, and you have the formation of the NCR and these formations of these different raider groups. But more importantly, you have humanity trying to band together and actually build society back, have the rule of law, and, you know, potentially voting for your leaders and those kinds of things. And then you have Fallout 3 and New Vegas and Fallout 4, where those kinds of ideas continue and the groups seem to become stronger. The Brotherhood of Steel becomes more and more established over time. The different political factions and major factions become more developed. So they continue to do research. I mean, the Institute continues to do research and develops more and more dynamic technology. I mean, heck, they've got teleportation and synths. All of that stuff continues to go on. And yeah, it seems like we get the destruction of the Enclave a few times, but they don't ever really go away. There's more going on. They're hiding out somewhere. And the Fallout TV show seems to lend to that. To that idea. But then you also have the changing of organizations over time. The Brotherhood of Steel seems to stand for certain things, but depending on who is leading it, as time goes by, their plans and the way that they work changes over time, much like different world governments. Heck, look at the Roman Republic turning into an empire. Look at the state of the United States over time has changed. Like, we're not the same type of democracy, or at least the details of the way our democracy works, isn't the same as it was 100 years ago, 200 years ago. All of these things continue to develop. And I think that's part of the greater story, is how do these things work in longer timeframes, and how do they develop, and how do they improve and then also decline or become corrupted? That is one of the big stories in Fallout, is that humanity has this habit of putting powerful, dangerous leaders in charge, that our organizations are only as good as the character of the individuals who are running them. And I think we're going to continue to see that play out. I think we're also going to see potentially the attempt to unite the United States under one banner, not just a specific region. But I think this is going to be one of those themes that plays out in the five seasons of the TV show. I think we're going to see the Brotherhood of Steel try to take control of the United States as a whole, as much of the geography as they possibly can, in order to rebuild the United States. And then we're going to see competition with the Enclave and other groups who are now attempting to do the same thing as populations rebound and as technology progresses. And we're going to see how that fails. I think it's all going to fail in the end. Nobody's really going to succeed. Or if it feels like they're succeeding, they're also doing it at some great cost. So, wonderful question, Wasteland Runner. I'm pretty sure that's where things are going to go. Again, I could be totally wrong. I like to think that I've got a better than 50% chance on a lot of my predictions, so, but maybe I'm delusional. We'll see. All right, let's go back to the Patreon. This one comes from Anthony H., who says, is there a game that you have ever tried multiple times to play and never been able to get into? If so, were you able to overcome this and play the game? And if not, which one was it and why? Oh, absolutely, all the time. There are games that I want to like a lot, and I try them and I bounce off them. I think one of the best old examples of that is Elder Scrolls Morrowind. Back when that came out, I picked it up and I only could play an hour or two and then just totally bounced off. It was too much reading. It was too much swinging my sword at something and missing it. Like, those mechanics early on were so unappealing at the time that I couldn't get into it. Still to this day, anytime I try to load it back up, even with a bunch of mods and those kinds of things, I never really can get into it. I appreciate it. I appreciate the lore. I appreciate the things that they were doing, the things that led to the development of other games and the way that Bethesda evolved as a game developer, or some people would say devolved when it comes to Morrowind. But I think that there's a balance between accessibility and depth that is tenuous, is difficult to manage. And I'm glad that they've played with that over the years across different games in different ways. Another example would be, and this is another, okay. So game of the year, not this year, but last year, 2023, Baldur's Gate 3. It's an amazing game. I love Dungeons and Dragons. I think that this game is great. I still have not finished the first chapter of the game, and I've restarted it 3 or 4 times. And I've restarted it playing with friends. I've restarted it playing with my son. I've done it by myself a few times through like the intro. I've rolled up a bunch of different characters, tried different perspectives on it. And the game is amazing. I know. It seems like the kind of thing I would absolutely love. It's full of interesting characters and deep lore and, all sorts of twists and turns. The combat is really cool. It's turn-based. I don't mind turn-based combat. I think that that's actually a really cool thing. The settings are really cool. The graphics are great. Across the board, it seems like the kind of game that I'm supposed to love, and yet I've had the hardest time getting into it. And I don't think it's the game's fault. I think it's probably... I just haven't been in the right mindset to take on something that feels that big and really lose myself in it. And I think that that's the problem, is that I haven't had the time or the resources or the energy to just lose myself in such a big thing. And so I keep going back to more comfort stuff, and that's a me thing, you know? So that's a great question. Yeah. This happens all the time. And then it doesn't always stay that way. Sometimes things turn around and I just have to be right in the right headspace. And then I come back and I jump in and I get lost in it and I enjoy it again. So yeah, interesting question, Anthony. Thanks for that one. All right, let's move on. Let's go back to the Discord. We've got Cleric Rufio, who writes, do you feel the faction survivors in groups in Fallout games reflect humans' resiliency and drive to survive? Or do you think they serve to highlight how little we as a species learn from past mistakes, arguably the same mistakes and hubris that led to the apocalypse in the first place, or both? Yes, I think both. I think human beings are complex, dynamic, and interesting to study and look at. We have both a uncanny ability to survive in most scenarios, maybe not as individuals, but as communities and small groups. You put human beings in a desert, they figure out how to survive. You put human beings on top of a mountain, they figure out how to survive. You put them on a spaceship, they figure out how to survive. You put them in a vault, they figure out how to survive. But at the same time, there's this thing that happens, which you are absolutely right about, where they learn from their mistakes, but then they still make the same mistakes because we are not fully rational creatures. In fact, we are not mostly rational creatures. We are mostly emotional creatures that sometimes make rational decisions. And when that's the case, and our systems become dynamic and big and complex enough, then we fall prey, especially when we become overly comfortable, we fall prey to misinformation and believing we're bigger and more powerful than we actually are, hubris. A lot of these qualities creep up, and We also just, and this is something I've discussed with my parents recently, we just have this habit in human history of wanting to put powerful individual leaders in charge of masses of groups of people. And those powerful individual leaders, for the most part, are in it for themselves because power corrupts, or because they are the kinds of people who just really want power. They really want money. They really want power. And that is their goal in life. And that's why they achieve it, because they focus on it. It's not because they want to be good leaders. It's not because they want to make the world a better place. Most of those people find ways of doing that that don't lead to power over other individuals. They find ways of doing that by like being involved in their local communities, raising money for charities, being involved in religious organizations. Those kinds of people typically don't want to be the people who are at the top, who are making all those decisions. And so we just kind of have this loop. So you're right. I think both of those things happen. We are both very good at surviving, but we are very bad at thriving for long periods of time without things falling apart. And that's just this kind of loop that we end up with. You just look at the history of civilization. We go through these loops. And overall, there's kind of this upward trend in quality of life, but it doesn't mean that we don't fall back down again. It's kind of like the stock market, right? Like the stock market goes up and down. Overall, there's an upward trend, but that those drops, the depression, the recessions that happen along the way are very terrifying, and they happen, and they're rhythmic, and they're going to happen again. And that's just kind of the nature of being a human. So there you go. That's my take on that. That's a great question. Dusty Ray asks, what new location would you like to see in Fallout 76? Appalachia is pretty big and runs through several states. That's a good question as well. I absolutely want more locations in Fallout 76. I think if they were to continue the map, and I'm not talking like external to the map, like the Pit or Atlantic City. Those are cool in their own ways. But I would like to see the map actually grow a little bit more, and I would love to see it continue south. Appalachia runs all the way down into like Georgia, actually like technically the very top of Florida. I would love to see kind of a deep south kind of environment. We haven't really gotten that. We've gotten things that are kind of similar to that previously, but I think that would be cool. A place like Atlanta would be really neat to see. I think that would be cool. So it's a quick question, a quick answer, but there you go, Dusty. Thank you for that one. Bad as a Ninja 32 asks, where do you think, having seen the first season of the TV show, do you think they will go in the next few seasons? I think they're going to work their way all the way back to the East Coast. I think that's going to be the plan. I think that season two is going to have a lot to do with New Vegas. They teased it at the end of the season. We've seen some people taking pictures of some of the settings, just like before season one, where they were setting up different locations, and those locations look like they're in Nevada. Nevada, I know I don't pronounce it correctly, in the desert, those kinds of locations. So I think we're going to get a more deep and clear explanation of what happened to the NCR, how New Vegas plays out, how the end of New Vegas fits into the TV show. I think that they've heard the concerns of the community that, oh, they ruined New Vegas. They didn't ruin New Vegas. They have a plan. They're going to explain it all. Don't worry. And then we're going to continue back to the east. I think that we're going to eventually get locations that we've been wanting to see on the TV show. And things are going to kind of play out. I think it's going to be the sort of thing that expands across the country. That's my take on it. I don't have solid proof for why that is, but other than I think the fan base would really enjoy it. And I also think that it would be really cool to kind of fill in the gaps about like what actually happened with the Brotherhood on the East Coast. You know, who is this faction that's now over on the West again? What are their goals? Where is the Enclave? I think things will come to a big head, That sounds funny. With the conflict between these different groups and or the remnants of those groups and what has happened in the future and will set up future Fallout games. So I think that's where that's going. So there you go, Ninja. That's my answer to that one. Saint Geob, speaking of Morrowind, writes, does being a content creator change the way you engage with the franchise as opposed to someone who plays the games and watches the show for fun? Yes, it does. And I think it's natural that it does. Anytime your context that you are engaging with something changes, it's going to change the way you engage with the thing that you're engaging with. If that makes sense. Yes, it absolutely does. When you aren't a content creator, you play games because you simply enjoy playing the game, or you have friends playing a game and you want to be part of that. You watch a TV show because you want to just enjoy what's going on, talk about it with your friends, those kinds of things. Those things are still true as a content creator, but there's also a need to continue, well, two things, to continue engaging with something because you happen to be doing a show about it. There's a little bit more professional pressure around that. So there are times where I'm like, you know, it'd be really cool to go do this other thing for a while and not think about Fallout, because I think about Fallout a lot. But there's a part of me that's, I do this for a living, just like you do for your job, where you go, I mean, heck, if you're a plumber, it might be nice to not think about plumbing for a while. But Monday morning, when you go back to plumbing, you got to think about plumbing again, right? So there's that side of it. And it's Fallout. It's not like it's plumbing. It's not like I'm like, oh, no, I have to think about Fallout again. But simply the fact that it is something now I require of myself means that it becomes more intentional. It's less about doing it when I feel like it and doing it because I need to. So there's a subtle change in that. The other side of this is that although I've always been the kind of person who likes to think critically about things, like it's hard for me to watch a movie and not analyze the intentions of the writers, the themes that are going on, the character arcs, those kinds of things. I tend to pick things apart and I enjoy them more by looking at the pieces and the details, whereas some people enjoy them less when you do that. I've always been like that, but there's even more drive to do that. When I do load up a game and get back in, or we get like a new update to Fallout 76, there's part of me that's constantly thinking about those things. And I still do lose myself in the games sometimes and just kind of enjoy playing them. But there's that nagging thing in the back of my brain that then kind of pipes up and goes, so that thing that just happened, here's why it happened, or here's what it means in the greater context. And it's like I've just been trained to see those things more, and so they happen more often. That doesn't necessarily mean it's less enjoyable. It's just a different kind of enjoyable. And it's not the same kind of enjoyable I get when I'm just doing something that I don't have to do a show about, if that makes sense. So that's a good question. It does change your perspective, but it doesn't make it worse or better. It's just different. So there you go. Thanks, Saint. All right. Sassy Lady writes, will there be a common ending in the season two of the Fallout show? It was a typo. I think it was probably on a phone. They meant a canon ending. Sassy Lady, absolutely, yes, there will be a canon ending. This is something that, again, Todd Howard has talked about, the showrunners have talked about, the writers have talked about. These shows are absolutely supposed to fit into the greater story. They are as canon as the games, at least the mainline games are. And the ending of season two will be canon, and any Fallout games that play out in the future will have to reconcile with whatever happens at the end of season two, whatever happens at the end of season three, at the end of season five. I think there's supposed to be five seasons. At least that's what they're shooting for. And so, yes, this will be canon. And I think that's fun. I like the idea that this plays into the games. I'm not against having a multiverse of different variations and ways things play out, but I also don't see a need to do that for with something like the Fallout TV show. They've kept it so close to the accuracy and the setting and the vibe and the details of the games that it just makes sense. Keep it canon. Absolutely. Let's see. I know I've got a few more here. No Phil, No Thrill writes, will there be more Fallout TV movies or shows in the future? Absolutely. This show continues to be popular and people like it, then yes. For two reasons. One is money. If the show does well, then more people subscribe to Amazon to watch the show. They make more money. It's kind of a no-brainer, right? Like, oh, well, let's just make another one because people like it and we'll make more money, right? I mean, it is a business. That's how it's going to work. But also, I think that this does a thing that the games don't do. And that thing is it reaches a much broader audience. It throws Fallout into the zeitgeist, that's a fun word, of just the common viewer, people who don't play games, who do watch shows, now know what Fallout is. That means that it continues to grow. It becomes a truly cultural phenomenon. It's not just a video game. And that lends it a certain air of authenticity. It puts it much more on par with an IP like Star Wars or Lord of the Rings, because it doesn't just exist in one format. When you think about Lord of the Rings or Star Wars, they started as something specific. Lord of the Rings started as books. Star Wars started as a series of movies. But now you can engage with those things across all forms of media. I don't see why Fallout can't do that. It's an amazing setting. It's got great stories and it resonates with an audience. So absolutely, there definitely will be more shows, and who knows, maybe movies. Maybe they'll do a movie. What if season 5's finale is a film, kind of like the X-Files did at one point, where they had the TV show and then they were like, okay, we're going to do an actual big budget movie. Now, movies don't really hold as much gravitas as they once did. I don't know that that's necessary, because a really long episode of a TV show with a big budget feels kind of like a movie, but who knows? I mean, it could happen in the future. Thanks, No Phil. All right, let's keep moving. We're getting close to the end here. I think I've got through almost all of them. I might have missed some from some of you, but I apologize if I just didn't notice them or they were on social media and I just forgot they were there or whatever. But I've tried to pull together everything I possibly can. This one comes from Sutik, who writes, question, in Vault 81, we eventually learn about the super virus and Curie and seen what the virus does to a vault dweller. However, when our character is attacked by the same creatures, we do not get infected. What is your reasoning behind why we cannot also suffer the same fate as the kid? And I just realized the same is true of Spores, PLSE vault in New Vegas. I think there's a typo there. We are breathing in the spore experiment. Why don't we become infected? Okay, so the simple answer is, they just didn't want to design around that happening. Like, they have limited resources in designing the game. That would have led it into some other complete storyline where you would have had some sort of infection and needed to get the infection fixed in order to function normally in the rest of the game and all of that. And they just didn't plan to design that out. I think that's the real answer. But the in-lore answer that I would give for these things is that the efficacy of viruses, spores, drugs, those kinds of things can change over time. And a lot of times they will actually go down in infectiveness or whatever, right? So in the case of a virus, maybe the virus was much more dangerous and able to spread when it first went through the vault. But over time, especially without the ability to continue to evolve and change, or maybe due to the ability of continuing evolving and changing, it just doesn't affect the same way it did in the past. It is not as infective. Maybe also your experiences out in the wasteland have built certain immunities and you just aren't as potentially infected by it as the vault dwellers would have been that were back in the day. Same thing could happen with spores, although I think that's less likely for spores to lose their efficacy over time. But I think you could probably make the argument for, well, it affects different people in different ways. It doesn't infect everybody the same exact way. Maybe you have to have a certain amount of a dosage. Like, there are little details you could tweak there about why that does or doesn't make sense, I guess. But I think the real answer is that they just didn't write that part out. They didn't. That would have taken continuations of the storyline, potential options, potential environments. Do they allow you to leave the vault and then now be infected and infect other people? That's a whole thing to have to program and design around. Or do they keep you in the vault until you solve it? And then that's part of the quest line. And then now you get out of the vault. And so they just kind of encapsulate it in one little section. There's a lot of what ifs when you take a variable that can expand like that and try to work it into a storyline. So I think that's the real answer. So there you go. Let's see. Scrolling down, we've got just a few left. Rando Wasteland writes, through all the Fallout games that you've played, what is your favorite environmental storytelling scene that you've happened upon? Skeletons on the toilet, gnomes up to devious activities and whatnot. I guess another one of those favorite questions. I guess I would have to just draw on, like, which ones do I remember the best? I think so let's go way back. The first time I saw a baby carriage with, like, skeletons around it was, like, that one hit me. I was just like, ooh, it's one thing to see, like, dude on a toilet or, like, you know, bum on a bench with a bunch of drugs next to him who, like, you know, overdosed himself because the world was ending. Those things are like, I don't know, that kind of, you kind of expect them, but then, like, oh, that was a family and they had a baby and they got blown away. No fault of their own. You know, like, that stuff hits you a little bit harder. Outside of that stuff, I do like the gnomes. I think that's a great one. When the gnomes show up in these funny situations, I think there's a yard. Where is it? Is it in Fallout 4 or Fallout 3? I think there's a yard of a, like, the backyard of a house that has an entire setup of what seems like an entire community of gnomes. And they're all in different spots in the yard. Some of them are, like, in a circle, like they're having a conversation. Some of them are over on the side of the yard. And I think there are some other things as well that kind of play into this scenario of, like, all the stuff that's going on. And my headcanon on that is just, like, some wastelander, this wasn't here when the bombs dropped, some wastelander over time had collected all these gnomes and just had been playing with them. Or some kid was just, like, creating a little environment in their backyard for, like, this is the gnome city. This is all the gnomes and what they're doing. I always thought that was cool. Good question, Rando. All right, we've got two more. Dan Bacchus Solo writes, what faction from any of the games should control the Wasteland? Bonus, which faction would you join if you were in the Wasteland? I think that the NCR, although they are flawed, has the best potential for building back a society with actual representation from the members of those societies and organized groups that work together in order to build something greater than themselves. I think that when you take a look at, say, the Enclave, they are fascist, period. They are fascist. Anybody who's, I understand some people are big fans of the Enclave is fascist. Just, they're authoritarian and they are fascist. And that never leads to good things for the majority of the people in society. We're just going to leave that there. The Brotherhood of Steel is ideologically a little bit insane. They have good intentions. Their reasoning comes from this idea that, like, technology is the downfall of everything, which I think is flawed reasoning. And so therefore their response to that is flawed. They would not be the best group to rule or unite the factions or the wasteland as a whole. And they should not have control of everything. If anything, they are a type of cult. And that's true. That doesn't mean that they can't do good things, but they are, you know, they are what they are. You could take any of these other groups. You know, you've got, there's actually lots of factions across the games, but you take, heck, any of the more dangerous factions, any of the Raider groups, any of the Legion, any of those organizations, there's significant problems there. The Institute is too insular. They prize academic research and scientific progress, and also overvalue their own intellect and their own perspective on things. Even though they have lots of information, they don't always make the best decisions due to that. And they also, even though they have the technology to develop synths and AI, are unable to understand that those things can evolve to the point where they have autonomous and their own perspectives and beliefs. And basically they've created other creatures. They're just not biological. And they are unwilling to treat them like creatures. They treat them like slaves, even though they don't want to be slaves, and they're unaware of that. That's a problem. Anytime you have people groups that deny the personhood of the other people groups, whether they be human beings or synthetic, that's a problem. That creates a underlying imbalance in society that eventually will destroy itself. The closest thing that we have in Fallout to an organization that tries, at least tries, it doesn't always succeed, but attempts to give everybody a fair shake, to give everybody an equal voice, is the NCR. That's the closest thing we have. And so I think that's the faction that needs to move forward and needs to, or would potentially control the wasteland. As of right now, that's my perspective. And that doesn't mean that there aren't other groups out there, other smaller groups, The followers of the apocalypse are a great example of this. They're a humanitarian group. They actually care about the well-being of other people in their community. They're open to bringing other people in and helping them regardless of their backgrounds. Like, they are probably, and I've talked about this before, one of the only really good groups. Like, if you were to judge them on kind of a like bad to good kind of scale, you know, like the D&D scale, like good and bad, chaotic, neutral, like all of that stuff, they are one of the truly good groups of the Wasteland. But that doesn't mean that they would control the Wasteland well. If anything, they would be taken advantage of by more groups that are willing to take their kindness and use it against them. They make sense, though, incorporated into a larger group like the NCR, where the rules and law and organization of the NCR can further the greater goals of people as a whole. And then they would work as a specific group within that, kind of like the federal government, and then also the other smaller organizations within the federal government that take on certain specific types of things. That's how that would work in my mind. But I'm not 100% set on all of this. I can't say that I've thought through every single group, or that there isn't a scenario where maybe one of these other groups is actually able to be changed. Like, I mean, you could take something like either the Enclave or the Institute and change the leadership, change the way that those groups fundamentally work. And it doesn't mean that they couldn't do good things. They could, but their current setups don't work that way. So there you go. That's my thoughts on that one. All right, we're getting to the last one here. This one is from Silas1324, who writes, "Would you want to go into the Wasteland IRL? No, I wouldn't." Okay, let me, you heard me talk about like, where would I survive? What game would I survive in? All of that stuff. Well, first of all, no, it's a hellscape. It's terrifying. And you probably wouldn't survive past the age of 30. Secondly, yes, there is a part of me that would, from a fan perspective, the same part of me that looks at Lord of the Rings or Elder Scrolls and goes, like the 14-year-old kid who was reading the Lord of the Rings and going, I want to live in this place. But when you actually think about it, no, that's a terrible place. There are monsters. There are things that are going to kill you everywhere. There's part of me that is still like that, that just, I love the setting so much that it would be really cool to actually see power armor in real life, or I don't know, and engage with a super mutant and shoot him in the face, you know, or whatever, you know, oh my God, there's a death claw over there. Yeah. So there's part of me that's like, okay, yeah, that's cool. It would be really cool to experience that, you know, drink a Nuka-Cola. What does that even taste like 200 years later? I don't know. But yeah, no, I would die. I would, and chances are the average person probably wouldn't have those cooler experiences that you get to have in the game. They'd probably live their entire lives in some corner on a farm, like a corner of the Wasteland on a farm with their family. They probably will have only traveled so far because it's dangerous. They'll be scraping by. They're hungry most of the time. They're miserable. Maybe one day they see a Brotherhood soldier walking across the distance, or comes by their farm and takes something of theirs, because where did you get that laser rifle from? That's ours. Thanks so much. Bye. You know, and then that's more likely the realistic scenario that happens when you live in the Wasteland than anything exciting and fun. But that's also part of why we have the games. That's part of why you're the protagonist in the game. That's part of why you are not afraid to go take on the dangers of the Wasteland and have all these experiences, is because when you die, you get to just reload the game. In real life, that's not how it works. It doesn't work that way. So that's my perspective on it. I would love to hear anybody who wants to further this conversation, chime in on the Discord or on the Patreon, respond to other people's questions, share your thoughts, create these little mini feeds, whatever. I'd love to have more of this conversation, and heck, maybe even talk with our patrons at the end of this month about some of these questions. I mean, we could pick and choose certain ones, and just people could kind of roll with the conversation, have kind of a very open kind of last patron episode of the year sort of thing. So that'll be coming up. Let's see. I think we're pushing that back, because traditionally That would be on Christmas. Yeah, that would be next week on the 25th. We're not going to do it on Christmas. I know a lot of people are busy with other things. So we're pushing that back to the first works, because most people celebrate the first on the night of the 31st. So the day of New Year's will actually work. So it'll just be one day late into the next year and next month. So come join us for that. And remember, you can gift patron subscriptions. There's like, if you are still looking for something to give a friend, or you want to ask somebody for something, you can gift them. You can get and set up as many months at whatever tier you want. Also, there's brand new stickers and t-shirts. I've updated all of the stuff that goes out every 3 months to people at different tiers. If you're at the $10 tier, you get a sticker every 3 months. If you are at the 25 or higher tiers, you get a t-shirt every 3 months. It's just another extra way of saying thank you so much for your support. I hope you enjoy them. I really like the Duke going through the logo of the show. I think that one's really cool. There's an FEV bottle. There's a Pip-Boy with the logo on the screen. I think that one's cool. And then what was the other one? There's a, the bottle cap. It's a Nuka-Cola bottle cap, but it says Fallout Lorecast instead of Nuka-Cola. I think that one looks, I think they all look good. I always want these, but I never allow myself to get them because they're only for patrons. They're not up on the shop. You can't just buy them. You have to be a patron in order to get these. So go check those out. I love your thoughts on those. And I think that's it. We got some new patrons to shout out. We've got Noah C. Thank you so much for signing up and joining us. And then also big shout out to our Sentry Bot, Larry D. Appreciate it. And we're at 101 current patrons. Vault 101 patrons. That's pretty cool. Thank you so much for your support. And of course, there's other ways. Share the show. Here's to another show, another year of all this fun stuff coming. And if you'd like to share this with your friends or comment on an Apple review, I will read those out on a future episode. You know how all this stuff works. All right. I can't wait to hear some of your responses to some of these questions. And I will see you next time. And stay safe in the wasteland. Bye, everybody. To plug into everything else we're doing, check out robotsradio.net. Reach out to me on Twitter at robots_radio. Check out the Robots Radio Rocket Club, where you can join me and a bunch of our other creators creating your podcast, starting a new podcast, or helping your current podcast grow. There's more information about that on robotsradio.net as well. And you can always talk with us and the entire community, over 2,000 people, on the Robots Radio Discord. Come join us. We'd love to chat with you. See you guys next time.
Over the last 75 years, over 10,000 chemicals have been introduced to our food supply. Yet the EU only allows 300 food additives. But at Thrive Market, we bring our members the highest quality brands and restrict more than 1,000 ingredients found at conventional grocery stores. Making the switch is easy with our Healthy Swaps scanner, which finds better versions of all your favorite pantry, snacking, and home essentials without the added junk, dyes, and fillers. Plus, it's all delivered straight to your door. So if you're looking to shop at a grocery store that actually cares about your health, go to thrivemarket.com/podcast and you'll get 30% off your first order and a free gift. Over the last 75 years, over 10,000 chemicals have been introduced to our food supply. Yet the EU only allows 300 food additives. But at Thrive Market, we bring our members the highest quality brands and restrict more than 1,000 ingredients found at conventional grocery stores. Making the switch is easy with our Healthy Swaps scanner, which finds better versions of all your favorite pantry, snacking, and home essentials without the added junk, dyes, and fillers. Plus, it's all delivered straight to your door. So if you're looking to shop at a grocery store that actually cares about your health, go to thrivemarket.com/podcast and you'll get 30% off your first order and a free gift.
Hey there, this is Tom from the future. I'm whispering because time travel requires whispering. I don't know if you've listened to the newest episodes in order to find this out, but with the holidays here, there is a brand new thing that Patreon is doing where you can gift subs, which is really cool because that means a few different things. First of all, if you know somebody else who enjoys this show, you can get them a sub to whatever tier you want
for whatever amount of time. So if you look at certain rewards and you think it would be really cool to get them those rewards, or just being part of the community, or even just getting ad-free episodes, that's something you can give this holiday season. Also, it means that if you've been wanting to sign up for the Patreon and you haven't been able to, and you want to ask for it as a gift from somebody else, then that can work as well. So, both of those things are options. All that you have to do is go to Patreon, log in, or create an account. You can just create a free account. You don't have to sign up with anybody, anyone's Patreon. And then you go to the Patreon page for this show, and you choose to gift a thing. You go through all the little options, and you send them a gift. It's really simple. It would be super helpful to us, and it's a fun thing to give. So, hope you consider that, and I hope you have a wonderful holiday. All right, let's get back to the show.